Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. for the most brutal, intense, uncensored show on the net, Daily Noise, right here on LBRocks.com.
And now back to whatever crap you're listening to.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
Humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live in LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And if it's Tuesday in Las Vegas, it's Subject to Discussion time. And the program, of course, is live in LVRocks, also podcasted in LVRocks.com. Thank you very much. And the program is also archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday night from whatever the hell time it is to whatever the hell time it ends. And then followed by King Hesh. And tonight, after the news to me and the news to you, we'll bring on Justin Reddy from the 2008 Political Perspective blog to give a little update on the elections we had last week and what's coming. And then after him will be our one-hour Doctor Who review segment there. And we'll talk to Invincor, and then we'll talk to Koenig Rules, and we'll have a little review of how they thought the season finale finished up and how the season was, the first season. So I thought it was excellent, but we'll get into that in a little bit with Invincor and Koenig. The program is part of the antiradio.net podcast. Thank you very much for everybody listening there. And also tonight, the face of Sci-Fi Channel changes forever with ECW Extreme Championship Wrestling going to be on. Now, here in Vegas, the TV guide says 10 o'clock, but on the Sci-Fi Channel commercials, it says 9 o'clock. So, whatever. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do. I was saying right there at the Centurion. Oh, yeah, we hear the Centurion. The Centurion in charge of production is Consoler. We're talking about how the OLN Outdoor Living Network is changing to its name to Versus. So, brilliant name for that channel. And then probably Sci-Fi will end up having to change its name because, first of all, what is wrestling? There he is. First of all, what does wrestling have to do with Sci-Fi? I don't know. Same thing with Law and Order have to do with Sci-Fi, and what did Passions have to do with Sci-Fi? So I don't know. We'll see. And then they're airing the Surface, a marathon of Surface coming up as well. So we'll get into that in a few minutes. And before I get into the review for the news to me, I'll just talk about what's in the headlines of the USA Today. They had the poll. First of all, the article at the top about that Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback injured in that helicopter motorcycle crash. And then about a poll boosting Bush for Iraq war. So he's starting to turn a corner here. And, of course, today he made a surprise visit to Baghdad into the green zone. He was there for about 5.5 hours. That certainly was a surprise. Amazing how this day and age with the information technology that we have that he was able to slip in there and basically almost get out of there without nobody knowing he was there. So amazing. And then also on the side, they have an upswing in violence, gang activity scrutinized. Violence crime percentage has gone up from this year, from 2005 to 2004, up 2.5%. And also they have a story about prescription drugs finding a place in teen culture. Apparently there's called Farm Parties Reflect New World of Drug Abuse, apparently prescription drugs. How this one kid on the cover on the front page of USA Today was taking OxyContin, the Rush Limbaugh pill, in high school, and now he's in treatment. He's among 19% of teens who report abusing pharmaceuticals such as OxyContin and Adderall. So, and then also they have the AFL-CIO is going to plan a New Orleans boom. Apparently they're going to invest $1 billion in affordable homes and a new downtown hotel. And single parent neighbors, blah blah blah. And then in the life section, they talk about the God and gays, churchgoers stand divided. And also, they have an article about Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves together again after Speed. And they also run down the box office figures. Cars was number one with $60 million in revenue for last weekend. The second highest rated movie at the box office was The Breakup at $20 million and X-Men at $16 million. So, and then also today we had, of course, Bush, I already mentioned, it was in Baghdad at King George. He was there less than a week after an airstrike killed Terror Chief Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and it was his second unannounced trip since 2003 when he was the turkey. He dropped in on Thanksgiving to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday with the troops. And the Prime Minister al-Maliki, who didn't know Bush was coming until 5 minutes before they met, and he said that Iraq was determined to succeed and that we have to defeat terrorists and defeat all the hardships. Bush made clear, however, that a U.S. military presence now at 132,000 troops would continue for a while. And also, since I mentioned ECW, which is part of the World Wrestling Entertainment Company, the WWE shares fell on a weak view. World Wrestling Entertainment on Tuesday posted a sharp fall in quarterly profit due to a drop in cable television advertising and gave a weak outlook through December, saying its shares down more than 5%. Because since they went on USA, the WWE doesn't have control over the advertising for its programs. It's the USA Network's in charge of its programs. They get a licensing fee. And on Monday, hit at Screen Gems is angling for an Easter time release of a feature film tentatively titled The Resurrection, the Bible story of Jesus Christ, beginning the day after he died on the cross and ending about 40 days later with his ascension into heaven, according to the Hollywood Reporter. And what else? Sunday, Krypton has been cut from the Superman movie. Bryan Singer, director of the upcoming Superman Returns, said he had to cut an early sequence in which Clark Kent's Superman flies in a crystal ship to the fragments of his homeworld, Krypton. The movie, in its rough form, was already clocking in at 2 hours and 45 minutes. Wow. And the final cut runs less than 2.5 hours. It was interesting on its own. It could deserve a life with the segment that was cut. So they're talking about now that they put into the IMAX version and also the DVD, this trip to Krypton for Superman. And then Arlen Specter said on Tuesday he's ready for a fight over the spy program. The Senate Judiciary Committee chairman says he's prepared to force telephone company executives to testify about the White House's eavesdropping program if the Bush administration doesn't fully cooperate in drafting new rules on what's allowable. He said, if we don't get some results, I'm prepared to go back to demand hearings and issue subpoenas if necessary. He said on CNN's Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer, Specter had threatened to subpoena executives of major telephone companies to get them to testify about their cooperation with the Blatt NSA Bush spy scandal. And, well, Saturday we had a poll. 36% of Americans aged 18 to 29 have at least one tattoo. The results suggest that 24% of Americans between 18 and 50 are tattooed. That's almost 1 in 4. Two surveys from 2003 suggested just 15% to 16% of U.S. adults had a tattoo. So everybody's getting tattooed like crazy. Of course, here in Vegas, we have the Inked place, or not Inked, it's from that show Inked, Hearts in Huntington over at the Palms Hotel. And also another Superman story, Faster Than Bullets, yes, but Superman gay, no
Jared
way.
Jared Vinsnail is he's opening up a tattoo parlor.
Who's that?
Shop.
Who's that?
Vinsnail.
Vinsnail.
Molly Crew.
Really? Where, here in Vegas?
Yeah, you know where O'Shea's is?
Oh, in there.
Yeah.
Oh, good place.
Because O'Shea's, I guess, is...
Part of the Harrah's.
Well, I think it's going down.
Oh, really? So he's
put
one
so
in there?
So they're going to put a Vince Neil tattoo shop
in there. Wow, good for him. And also, that's where Beecher is putting an station next door there at the Imperial Palace. Beecher is putting a rock house over there in that front
Ooh.
Bar. Beecher, Jeff Beecher from the Hard Rock. He does Beecher's Madhouse at
sure.
the Hard Rock. Never heard of him?
No, I haven't. Is he
someone
important?
He does this important? Crazy show. Actually, he'd be good for you guys on Daily Noise. He does this crazy show. I saw it once when he first started years ago. It's like a Friday show. He's got midgets. He's got chicks. He's got guys on stilts around. It's like a circus, but it's like raunchy. It's good. You know, it'd be
so it's like
Motley
Crue, but without the music.
It's like a variety show. And this is a guy that jumped into the fish tank over at the MGM a few years ago.
Oh, and he got busted.
Yeah, and he got tied up with that guy from the Girls Gone Wild video. It was Beecher who did that. He's actually
someone,
the one that jumped in.
Someone threw a punch, I think, right?
I
or something
know.
Happened.
I guess the
he was going to sue the MGM or something.
Yeah, the Girls Gone Wild guy was mad because the MGM security roughed him up when actually it was Beecher's the one that jumped into the fish whatever that thing was,
that's
the
right.
aquarium. But he's put in a bar at the Imperial Palace called the Beecher's Rock House. And he's got a midget band, a mini Kiss band. It was all midgets. They're all painted like Kiss, and they're midgets. That'd be good for Daily Noise or somebody else. It'd be outstanding. And what else? Faster than Speeding Bullet, yes, but Superman gay? No way. After weeks of internet buzzing, the new Superman movie portrays the Man of Steel as the man of aluminum foil as gay. The director of the film issued a strong denial on Friday. Instead, it was the most heterosexual character he has filmed. Of course, he's running around in tights and a cape, but oh well. Superman is probably the most heterosexual character in any movie I've ever made, said Bryan Singer, director of Superman Returns, a new movie about the crime-fighting superhero, blah, blah, blah. I don't think he's ever been gay. No, I don't think so either. I've been following comic books for years. I don't think Superman's ever quite been portrayed as gay before.
They want you to believe that.
Yeah.
It's the end thing to be gay now, even if you're not.
Well, they've been telling me, forget Batwoman's going to be coming back. She's been coming back as a lesbian.
Wait, aren't all superheroes in some type of tights?
It's like that, on Saturday Night Live, they have the ambiguously sexual superheroes or something like that. And then what else? Friday, sagging job approval. Speaking of sagging, sagging job approval numbers don't get a boost. This is from the Zogby Interactive Poll. With President Bush's job approval ratings languishing in the low 30s, not even Osama bin Laden can come to the rescue. A Zogby Interactive survey shows. It shows that even if the U.S. military forces were to capture bin Laden, it wouldn't prove much of a bump to Bush's approval numbers. Asked how much credit would be due President Bush if bin Laden were caught, 52% they would give him no credit because he turned his attention instead to the war in Iraq after the war in Afghanistan. Absolutely, I've been saying that. Should have finished off Afghanistan and captured bin Laden, and then if we had to go in Iraq, he should have built the case for Iraq. That's what I think. 28% would give him all the credit, while 17% said he would deserve some of the credit. And a presidential job approval in fighting against terrorism would be at 42% if bin Laden were found. I think that's off. I think we'd go up higher than that. Universal Pictures on Friday has won the rights to the Boom Studios comic book Talent after a bidding war that involved five studios, including DreamWorks and Warner Brothers, written by Christopher Golden and novelist Tom Snagoski, and drawn by, who cares who's drawn it. The four-issue miniseries follows a 34-year-old college professor who is a lone survivor of a plane crash. He discovers that he has mysteriously taken on the talents of those who died in the crash and finds that the attributes are a blessing and a curse. That sounds like a good concept for a movie and a good series, too, and like Batman, kind of. Thursday, Movie City News has posted it. It says it is the casting notice for James Cameron's upcoming top-secret sci-fi movie Project 880. With the first details about its story. In the future, Jake, a paraplegic war veteran, is brought to another planet, Pandora. Pandora's box, I guess. Which is inhabited by the Na'vi, a humanoid race with their own language and culture. Whatever. Hopefully that's they could flesh out that story just a little bit more, please. And then also, a poll, U.S. disapproves of war in Iraq. The death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in Iraq came as more Americans than ever thought the war in Iraq was a mistake, according to the AP Ipsos poll. The poll found that 59% of Americans say the United States made a mistake going to war in Iraq, the highest level yet in the AP Ipsos polling. Approval of President Bush's handling of Iraq dipped to 33%, a new low. His overall job approval was 35%, although I saw a poll today, his approval ratings are climbing up a little bit after the death of Zarqawi. And, of course, Wednesday was the day that Zarqawi was killed, and also Battle Royale to be remade. New Line Cinemas has bought the remake rights to the Japanese sci-fi movie Battle Royale and is setting up the project with Neil Moritz and Roy Lee, according to Variety. And with that, move on to news to you. And let me see who's in the chat room. I get hammered for ignoring the chat room. Giorgio's in the chat room. Kai9, I guess who that is. Welcome, Mike the C, and it's me and Sam is in the chat room, so welcome. And Cylon's over to get Skiffy's headquarters. Absolutely. I can't understand why they're showing, they got a deal with WWE, and they're hoping that ECW will bring in some viewers, especially in the summer, because all their shows are on reruns, so that's where I think they're going. And this is from today, from the LA Times. Attacks aimed at Iraqi civilians. Explosions and gunfire killed at least 27 Iraqis and injured 133 on Monday. Much of the violence appeared to be directed at residential areas and open-air markets. I guess they won't be hunting, looking for grapefruits there. The U.S. military also announced that a soldier was killed while on patrol Saturday near Diwaniya, 80 miles south of Baghdad. In the Baghdad Shiite Muslim neighborhood known as Sadr City, a car bomb exploded at, I got the timing down, 8:20 a.m. in a crowded market, killing 5 people and injuring 41. About an hour later, another car bomb detonated in a downtown Baghdad market, killing 5 more Iraqis and injuring 15. 4 Iraqis were killed and 10 injured by mortar rounds fired at Abu Idshir, another Shiite neighborhood in Baghdad. Unbelievable. And then in Balad, 45 miles north of Baghdad, nice little neighborhood up there, you know, where all the ritzy people live, I guess. 2 car bombs detonated 5 minutes and 50 yards apart, killing 6 Iraqis and injuring 25, including 2 children who were critically wounded. And then at 1 o'clock, a car bomb killed 4 people and injured 42 in the northern town of Talafar, the location of a highly touted U.S. counterinsurgency operation last year. And in the northern oil hub of Kirkuk, a gunman killed 2 Iraqi motorists along a highway. It's unbelievable. And in the southern city of Basra, a rocket struck a house and killed a man in his garden. A witness said that the rocket probably was aimed at British forces occupying a hotel. So much for the, they thought that the Zarqawi being dead, they have quieted down in Iraq. It looks like it's just the opposite. Now the new leader of the Al-Qaeda in Iraq threatened the revenge for the death of Zarqawi, so we'll see. And actually, I was corrected. It's pronounced K-9. Oh, I see. Okay, so it's K-9. K-A-I-G-H is K-9. Very good. Uh-oh. There's the insurgency. Civil war as the... Was that before or after Bush left? And FEMA. All hell's breaking loose. So, I mean, it's a disaster over there. We just got to get those guys, poor guys, out of there. FEMA has said it has identified more than 1,500 cases of potential fraud after Katrina and Rita. Tuesday, FEMA has referred those cases to Homeland Security Inspector General. They said they have identified $16.8 million in improperly awarded disaster relief money and start efforts to collect the money. The General Accounting Office said it was 95% confident that improper and potentially fraudulent payments were much higher, between $600 million and $1.4 billion. The investigative agency found people lodged in hotels often were paid twice, since FEMA gave them individual rental assistance and paid hotels directly. FEMA paid California hotel. What the hell are they doing in California? Paid California hotels $8,000 to house one individual. Must be in the suite at the Hilton. The same person received 3 rental assistance payments for both disasters. So whoever this was getting was triple dipping, as they say, I guess. In another instance, FEMA paid an individual $2,358 in rental assistance, while at the same time paying about $8,000 for the same person to stay.
Brilliant.
Yeah, to stay 70 nights at more than $100 per night in a Hawaii hotel.
Tell me, you are one pathetic loser.
Absolutely. What the hell are you doing at your Katrina Rita, Vic? What are you doing in Hawaii? I don't know. Maybe that's for Don Ho. I don't know. Is that money to go see him sing? FEMA could not establish the 750 debit cards worth $1.5 million, even went to Katrina victims, like the auditors said. Among the items purchased with the debit cards, I don't remember those. I think they had, $2,000 on them or something? Oh, an all-inclusive one-week Caribbean vacation in Punta Cana Resort in the Dominican Republic.
Holy
cow! Yeah, isn't that nice? Oh, 5 season tickets to the New Orleans Saints professional football games. This is definitely needed. Adult erotica products in Houston and Girls Gone Wild videos in Santa Monica, California. Yeah, any real disaster relief to get those. And Dom Perignon champagne and other alcoholic beverages in San Antonio. And a divorce lawyer services in Houston. So much for going for relief. Yeah, and they were saying that people were going to abuse this when they were going to hand out these debit cards. Nobody listened. You know, we must get assistance to the American people. You know, BS. They should have had more of a general or somebody kind of a overseer of this stuff accounting for this money. Bush tells Iraq leader U.S. will back him. This is from today. President Bush told Iraq's new leader in a surprise face-to-face visit on Tuesday that the fate of his war-scarred country was in Iraq's own hands. Bush was pressed in turn not to withdraw U.S. troops too quickly. He said there's a worry almost to a person that we will leave before they are capable of defending themselves, Bush says. He flew back to the U.S. He spent over 5.5 hours in Baghdad. This time he traveled to the cities that we were talking about, the Green Zone and blah, blah, blah. So basically, a lot of people are saying it's a PR stunt to get over there and have him boost his ratings and all that. So I don't know. We'll see. And then speaking of boosting ratings, Karl Rove, they announced that Karl Rove's not going to get indicted now. So it's another strike against the Democrats here. So we're swimming upstream again a little bit. But what are you talking about in the chat room? That
Democrats piss me off.
Running away from hurricanes and straight into typhoons. Nothing for Vegas hotels. No, I haven't said heard anything about Vegas hotels for the money. That so we'll see. How about that? How about queuing up that thank you, sir? May have another round sound. What is that? I don't think we have that. This is not a, what kind of a radio station think this is, or crying out loud. Tipper Gore, ready to support another White House run. Gore says she doesn't think about what might have been. This is from ABCnews.com today. She spent 5 years recovering from the last run at the White House, but Tipper Gore says she's ready if her husband wants to do it again. I hope he is ready to do it again. If he were going to run in the future, of course I would support him, Tipper Gore told ABC News. I think he'd be a fantastic president. He's already got the majority of votes of the people in this country once, so that says something. Absolutely. Al Gore is back in the political spotlight for this new documentary, blah, 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 Inconvenient Truth. I can't say yes and I can't say no, Tipper Gore said. He says he's not interested in running in 08. So, but at the premiere, they said Al Gore is more circumspect. However, his exact words is, I don't have plans to be a candidate again. So that could change, though. I hope it does change, because I think he's going to be, him or Edwards, the only two are going to slow down the Republicans now. Video on Marine killing Iraqis draws ire. This is from the WTOP radio in New York, in Washington. A music video posted to the internet telling a tale about U.S. Marine killing members of an Iraqi family is being condemned by an Islamic group and investigated by the Marine Corps. The four-minute video called Haji Girl appears to be sung by a Marine in front of a cheering audience. The lyrics? Iraq. Peace and quiet in Iraq. We brought all this peace and quiet to Iraq, and we've settled things down over there. Hell no. The lyrics talk about the Marine gunning down members of an Iraqi woman's family after they confront him with automatic weapons. The Marines are aware of the video posted on the internet that purports to show a Marine singing an insensitive song about Iraqis. The song was inappropriate and contrary to the high standards expected of all Marines. So, we'll see. Boy, this just keeps going. The singer is shown playing a guitar and singing about meeting an Iraqi woman and then being confronted by her brother and father who have guns. The lyrics describe the Marine pulling the woman's little sister in front of him and watching blood spray from her head. What the hell? Then he sings about blowing the father and brother to eternity. So, disgusting. Disgusting. I hope they get to the bottom of this stuff over there. And this next one's for Monday. Obscure trade settlement could create $480 million slush fund for the White House. The resolution of an obscure trade dispute involving imports of Canadian lumber to the United States could result in a $480 million slush fund for the White House, and according to a lawyer familiar with the case. There's a $4 billion, there's an account they set up, there's a trade dispute between with NAFTA and the WTO and all that. Anyway, this fund, $4 billion from the account will be returned to Canada, $1 billion will be returned to the United States, and of the $1 billion that will remain in the United States, half is designated to the U.S. lumber industry. The remaining $500 million is to be split between a joint initiative benefiting the North American lumber markets, whatever that is, and the meritorious initiatives in the United States, such as Katrina reconstruction. So that's going to be the slush fund they're talking about. So... it says the United States is requesting $480 million for meritorious initiatives and just $20 million of the joint initiative benefiting the North American lumber market. So apparently some kind of escrow system will allow the $480 million to be funneled from the Treasury Department to the White House. So if you can follow that, I mean, it's interesting. Somehow the White House is going to get their hands on $480 million of a slush fund from this trade dispute that we had going on with Canada. What they're going to do with it, who knows? Maybe buy another election or steal one. Who knows? More evidence that Representative Jerry Lewis is dirty. This is from Capitol Blue on Monday. A top aide for House Appropriations Committee Chairman Jerry Lewis, not the comedian but the politician, received $1.96 million in severance payments from a lobbying firm with ties to Lewis. The connection between Lewis, a California Republican, and the Washington-based firm Copeland, Lowry, blah, 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 is under a federal investigation. The payment to Jeff Shockey, who left Copeland, Lowry, this law firm, early last year, become a deputy staff director of the Appropriations Committee, was contained in his 2005 financial disclosure form.
Next question.
So it's just, I don't know.
Next question.
So he got $1.96 million severance pay due to connections between just Jerry Lewis and bills and things that he's pushing through Congress. So that's how it all ties in. And also we had for Monday, Rove won't be charged in CIA leak case. Monday night, top White House aide Karl Rove has been told by prosecutors he won't be charged with any crimes in the investigation into the leak of a CIA officer's identity. So he's off the hook. So
wow.
If you're a Republican in the White House, the announcement cheered Republicans in the White House beleaguered by war and low approval ratings. Blah, who cares? I wish they would have indicted him. I'm going to take him out of the picture. This also from Sunday from the Des Moines Register in Iowa. John Edwards and Hillary Clinton, top Democratic choices for president.
Oh my gosh. Does that suck?
I don't know. Edwards, I think he'd make a good president. Former United States Senator John Edwards of North Carolina leads a list of potential Democratic presidential candidates, while Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack holds fourth place, which is sad because this poll was done in his own state, trailing Edwards by 20 points in an early test of support among likely Iowa caucus participants. A new Iowa poll conducted for the Des Moines Register showed Edwards, the runner-up in the Iowa Democratic caucuses 2 years ago, and a frequent visitor to the state since then, is a choice of 30% of Iowans who say they are likely to take part in the January 2008 caucuses. That's good that he's in front there of Hillary. Like I said, I was all for Hillary until now Edwards, so I hope we keep Edwards in there. You know, he's got to be the anti-Hillary. And what else? Bush's personal aide, if an aide looks nervous, the president will think there's something to be nervous about. So you look calm when everything is going wrong. That is odd. Sunday from today, the Time magazine on Monday, which was released early on Sunday night. The only words he ever says in public are, "This is the official 2-minute warning for the press, 2 minutes. He delivers them with the effortless authority to vast crowds after replacing President Bush's note cards or speech text on the podium, just so, blah, blah, blah. This guy, Blake, he's a 26-year-old Texan. He was dating Bush's daughter, Jenna. So he's the one who said that when all hell is breaking loose, you have to look calm and everything else, even when the world's caving in around them. So, you know, whatever. And what else? Then we have Rove. On Monday, Republicans should address Iraq war. White House advisor Karl Rove said Monday that Republicans facing midterm elections should campaign on the economy's strength and discuss the war in Iraq with no qualms. I don't know where he's going with that from. The economy's strength. Have you seen the price of gas? We have no excuses to make for it, Rove said during a fundraising dinner for New Hampshire Republicans. War supporters need not apologize for removing the threat of Saddam Hussein. And with so much work left to do, now is the time to talk about leaving Iraq. Absolutely. You should have been talking about that a year ago. Rove said Democrats pushing for the withdrawal of American troops should be the ones facing tough questions about wanting to cut and run. They trump all this up all the time. They never said cut and run. Murtha just said to redeploy the troops to the border and in oil fields and let the Iraqis slug it out in the center of the country. That's what that's all about. Rove said they are profoundly wrong. More than 400 people paid $100 to have dinner and hear Rove rally the faithful. And protesters were there. And this is New Hampshire. This is where this phone jamming business was going on, where the Republicans were jamming the phones during election day to get out the vote drive, and the Democrats couldn't get their voters out the vote. And one of the protesters says, "Americans don't like cheaters. These people cheated," said Herb Moyer, 60 years old, a Democrat from Exeter. The sign he carried read, "Karl Rove and the New Hampshire GOP, where criminals congregate." So, yeah, that's where that's all coming back from. And we had this from the LA Times from Sunday. Democrats, loser linguistics. This is from Jeffrey Nunberg, who's a linguist who teaches at UC.
You are one pathetic loser.
He teaches at the UC Berkeley School of Information. His new book, oh, blah, blah, "Together American Can Do Better." The Democrats' awkward new slogan, that's the Democrat, "Together American Can Do Better." Yeah, they can approve on that. The awkward Democrats' new slogan may not say much more than anybody would be improving on the current bunch of bozos.
Lord have mercy, it's a room full of homosexuals.
Now that should be the slogan.
It's a room full of homosexuals. Wow.
Yet many Democrats are hoping that it'll be enough to bring the party back to life this fall. They might be right, given the widespread discontent with the administration's apparently bottomless bozosity. but very ungrammatically of the Democrats' slogan reminds you that this is a party with a chronic problem of telling a coherent story about itself.
You want to get stoned?
Right down to an inability to get its adverbs and subjects to agree. Absolutely. That's what I said before. Howard Dean's got to get out of there because they were talking about, he was on there today talking about the, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, and they're airing on Hannity and Combs. I'm like, oh, what are you... Please just shut up and let the party run itself instead of him sticking his foot in his mouth every 2 minutes. So, anyway, I think with that, we'll bring on our guest, Justin Reddy. You ready? Wait a minute. Okay. Just a moment. And where else? This is the official two-minute warning for Sean's press. Oh, but you know what? I'm dating Sean O'Mac's daughter. I don't even have a daughter, so don't even give me that. I hope I don't have a kid. I mean, who knows? I know by now. Bush administration to develop plans to keep 50,000 U.S. troops in Iraq for decades. This is ridiculous. The New York Times reports that the Bush administration is making plans to keep tens of thousands of U.S. troops in Iraq indefinitely. So, let's see. On Meet the Press, Barry McCaffrey, retired general, said it was likely that the U.S. will keep at least 50,000 troops in Iraq for the next 10 years. Wow, isn't that ridiculous? I mean, first they say we're getting out, now they're saying we're going to keep 50,000 troops in there for a decade. So, I don't know. Anyway, with that, we'll bring on Justin Reddy. We'll, there we go. Wow, very patriotic music there. Justin, are you there, sir?
I'm here. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
I like my music.
Oh, I know. It's a very puts us in the right mood to talk about the primaries and everything from last week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So now, first of all, Mike, what's your impression of this yearly coast thing that happened here in Vegas? Of course, I was not invited to attend.
Oh.
In my home backyard, all the liberals.
Well, they're just too big for their britches now. Before, they would have been happy to have any media, but now Maureen Dowd and all those folks got left out.
Well, I'm glad I didn't get invited because it's supposed to be, I don't understand it. It's supposed to be about bloggers and everything, yet they bring in, well, Reed, because he's a, I don't like Reed. He's a publicity hound anyway. But then, then Warner comes in and all this stuff. It's like they hijacked this thing from, the bloggers.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about that, I've noticed, on Daily Kos and some of these other Daily Kos and some of these other places. I mean, I don't really know. There's like a debate about whether they want to influence everything, but then it's like a question of now that they have a chance to influence, are they being influenced by the people they're trying to influence? It's a kind of angst-ridden debate that people who have nothing better to do engage in, I guess.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, I was funny. I'm like, oh, I didn't know this was even happening, first of all. And second of all, I didn't even get an invitation to come there, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, honestly, I wouldn't be, people there shouldn't be too worried about it. If the New York Times wanted to talk to me, I wouldn't be complaining. I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm a blogger, I'm sorry, I'm ideologically pure, I can't talk to mainstream media.
yeah, I don't know. I thought that was odd, but oh well. And then so now, everybody, a lot of new listeners, this is Justin Reddy. He runs the blog called the 2008 Political Perspective blog, and he's from Baltimore, right?
Yep, from Baltimore area, yep.
There you go. And, of course, we talk about what happened last week, and a lot of instant messages from the chat room were asking about the Busby-Bilbray race in California. Now, that was kind of a misnomer, too. The Democrats were hoping they'd win that, but the voter registration is like 3-1 Republican in that district.
Right, and pretty much everybody knew that it would be tough for her to win. I think that it's hard in that district. Over the last few elections, Democratic candidates well-known Democratic candidates, like the candidate for president, like Don Kerry and Al Gore and other people, very rarely break 45%. They're hitting right about 44-45%. And Busby, throughout running, even in the election before the runoff, she and the other no-name Democratic candidate got 45% combined. So it was hard for her to get past that 45% number, and obviously in a basically a one-on-one race, you got to get more than 45%.
Yeah, and they showed Bilbray. Now, this is only a temporary thing because Bilbray's only in until November because they got to go through this all this over
right.
again. Because this
right.
is only to fill Duke Cunningham's remaining months in the Congress,
sure.
and his re-election is in November. So now they're going to go through all this all over again in November.
Yeah, but history seems to show that if Busby wants to run again, usually the rematches after a runoff to fill a seat, usually a rematch 6 months later, the candidate that loses the runoff doesn't really do any better. In fact, they usually do worse.
Yeah, so I mean, unless they come up with somebody else.
Like, okay, let's give the guy a chance to be a congressman or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, how about the who's that lieutenant governor of California? What's his name? He's the one ran against Schwarzenegger and all that. I can't remember his name.
Bruce DeMonte?
Yeah, man, he can run for Congress against Bill Bray. He had to move into that district, but you know, that doesn't stop anybody.
Yeah, uh-huh. but it's a tough district for Democrats. I mean, and honestly, if that was a district where the corruption issue would have really, you would think would have worked the most. I mean, Bill Bray's a lobbyist, and obviously they're running to replace a guy who took excesses to new levels.
But they were not able to
defeat him. But like you said, the voter registration in that district is very pro-Republican.
Yeah, now do you know if he's related? And here in Nevada, we had a Congressman Jim Bilbray. I've been trying to find out if he's related to the Bilbray in California.
I don't know.
I'll have to dig that up. And then also Washington State, they have a Senate. Maria Cantwell, we talked about her before, incumbent Maria Cantwell versus Mike McGavick.
We have talked about that.
Now, she's only down by, 2 to 6 points, but McGavick's down, but Cantwell's got a lot of money behind her, huh?
Yeah, she does. She spent a lot of money to get elected to begin with, but then for a while, and we talked about this last time, for a while she was actually in the red. Her campaign account showed that she was in debt. And I think it was mostly debt to herself, but since last year she's been working real hard, and now she has about $5.5 million in the bank, or she's raised $5.5 million. I'm not sure exactly how much she has left in the bank. McGavick hasn't been too shabby; he's raised about $3 million. And again, I'm not sure about the disparity of what's in the bank and what's not. So you know, clearly she's gotten with it on fundraising, but the polls show McGavick really running close. I mean, some polls, there's disparities, but basically he's running anywhere from 2 to 6 points down. But considering that this is supposed to be the year where the Democrats are, you know, going to retake both houses and it's just a foregone conclusion, it doesn't look good for the Democrats that in a state like Washington, where they should be able to win the Senate seat pretty easily, they're in this dogfight.
Yeah, I said it before. I mean, the Democrats got to get a message together. You can't be anti-Republican, or nobody's going to, you're going to get sick of hearing from you. You,
and you
come
can't
out.
Be anti-incumbent, anti-Republican when you're already an incumbent, and
exactly.
That's another problem Cantwell's got.
Yeah, and then they say they got to come up with some kind of proposals and ideas, and Howard Dean's a major Achilles heel for the Democrats. He's always sticking his foot in his mouth. I mean, he said something today that was kind of odd. About Roe, how President Bush seems to care.
And you guys got to let that go. I mean,
what?
Nobody's going to the polls. I'm sorry. No swing voter's going to the polls and going, that Karl Rove, I'm going to go vote for my Democratic candidate for Congress because I want to stick it to Karl Rove.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not an issue.
Exactly. And he's saying Howard Dean's saying, President Bush cares more about Roe than he does about the average American. I mean, that just came out of nowhere.
That's over the top.
What is he talking about? So they got to get rid of him. I say if they were smart, they'd make him a talk show host to go up against Limbaugh, and it'd be perfect for Howard Dean. You know?
Yeah, it'd be very bombastic. It'd be very entertaining.
Yeah.
I agree. But, you know, the problem with the Democratic Party right now is that they have a great opportunity. I mean, people are mad at their politicians right now.
Yeah, they're going to squander it.
The Democrats, whenever they try to capitalize on it, they just look like worse politicians than the people that people are mad at.
Yeah, they're going
to
squander it.
One of the things I was pointing out about the Washington Senate seat, though, is that, and I alluded to the Maryland Senate seat as well, which is an open seat. The Democrats have got to hold, if they're going to think about even sniffing retaking the U.S. Senate, they've got to pick up a net of 6 seats. They've got to hold the seats that they should be holding easily.
Yeah.
You know, they can't afford to lose any open seats that they are holding right now. And, last time I was on, we talked a lot about the Maryland Senate race. I'm not going to do overkill, but, again, it's a situation where they've got to hold their seats and then take a large percentage of the swing seats to have a chance to be elected
exactly.
To the U.S. To chance not to be elected, but to, you know what I mean, to
take control
of the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, well, they don't realize, a lot of these people don't realize, it should be easier taking over the Senate than the House. Like, going, you're out of your mind. It's a mountain compared to the House, you know.
They say that because historically the Senate has changed hands more than the House.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be tough for either one of them to change hands this year, and I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Democrats will make gains. You know, and maybe even significant gains, but I think it's going to be hard for them to take both houses.
Yeah, yeah. Rove not getting indicted, it's going to help because, you know, he can get out there and help the congressional Republicans a little bit more now that he's free of, you know, worry about getting indicted.
Bush is going to be announcing that they're bringing more troops home.
Uh-huh.
You know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard what you're talking about with the 50,000, they're going to keep 50,000 troops in Iraq for 10 years.
Yeah.
You got to think, though. I know that sounds bad, but you really have to think that we have several thousand troops in Germany still.
That's true.
When they say that, they mean they're going to keep them there in bases like they do in Western Europe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I know they're building a base in southern Iraq as well.
Right.
They said we're going to be there for years anyway. As I said, there's no easy solution with Iraq. I mean, also you want to talk about the Montana. They have incumbent Conrad Burns. He's running against John Tester. Now, something with him, he didn't show up for a debate or something, right? He went to a fundraiser instead or something. Is that right? Is that him?
Who's that, Tester?
No, Conrad Burns. Is that him?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
This is a seat, I picked this as one of the seats the Republicans really need to hold. Republicans should be able to win in Montana. Now, Tester's, I think, a pretty good candidate. He's the state Senate president. He's much like the guy that was elected governor there, Brian Schweitzer. He's a farmer, you know, he's from a rural area. He can kind of talk the talk as far as being kind of a conservative in a sense, or being more of a populist. But Burns has been a weak campaigner for years, and he barely won in 2000, a year that Bush, you know, cleaned house in Montana, and Conrad Burns only beat Schweitzer by about 4 or 5%.
Mm.
And, you know, he's been a weak as far as fundraising, but he's been picking it up the last year because he knows he's under fire.
Yeah. And then what else? Now Arizona's John Kielce's starting to get a little more contested now too, because with that guy Peterson, he's a big shopping center mogul, and they say he's got money to spend, and he's closing in on Kyle. Let's put that seat in the play.
Yeah, but I've seen polling recently, and this is one of the I picked this Senate seat to talk about as well, because this is another seat that if you're looking for a big sea change for the Democrats to take over the U.S. Senate. They've got it. This is a seat where if the Republicans look like they might lose this seat, that would mean it's big trouble for them, because they should be able to hold Arizona. First of all, you've got McCain, who's very popular all over the state. It's a pretty conservative state to begin with.
Yeah.
And Kyle has been he's not had any scandals associated with him. He's very conservative,
mm-hmm.
but he's not scandal prone. So if he were to get in trouble or lose this race, I think it would be a sign that it would be a really bad night on election night for the GOP. But I've seen polling recently that shows Kyle's still ahead by double digits.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it also could depend on how popular the governor is, because she's a Democrat, and see if she can outpoll voters more than McCain. So it's going to be like a tug of war between those
two. That's true, and Napolitano has been very popular. But one thing Kyle has going for him, and actually Napolitano has this going for her too, is they've both been in the press a lot lately because of all the immigration issues,
mm-hmm.
and Kyle has been kind of on the forefront talking tough. And in Arizona, people are not as ambivalent towards illegal immigration as people are in other parts of the country, although actually people are all pretty mad about it all over the country.
Yeah.
But in Arizona particularly, it's a huge issue.
Yeah,
and I know it's there in Nevada as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge issue. We have this one guy who does a radio show here called Wake Up America every night for 5 nights a week. Because all he talks about is illegal immigration. No, it's amazing. I thought, oh, I'll go up there in 2 months. You know, it's 2 years later, and he's still talking about it. Yeah, you know?
But it's still going on. I mean, it's
I just know. I just thought the issue with that. How can you talk about a single issue for 2 hours a night for 5 nights a week? Harping on.
I guess America hasn't woken up yet. He's still Wake Up America.
Yeah, I don't know. And then what else? I'm moving east on the list here. And in Missouri, you have incumbent Jim Talent versus Claire McCaskill. Now that's a famous family. I know them from. I mean, I lived in Chicago. And McCaskill family. It's a big political family in Missouri, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And this is another one that I didn't want to put this on a must-win for the Republicans, but for the Democrats, I have it on the list
mm-hmm.
as a must-win for Republicans. But honestly, the Democrats, this is a seat that's going to be tight. I think it's, you're going to see this be a 51-49 kind of race. McCaskill ran a good race for governor, came very close to winning in 2004 against Matt Blunt, who's the current governor. And she's very popular, pretty moderate Democrat. And Jim Talent has been, by all counts, a pretty conservative Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But the GOP, Missouri's been trending Republican for many years, and we talked about this last time. But beating Talent is really, it's the key to kind of a puzzle. The Democrats, if the Democrats want to regain control of the Senate, they've got to win seats like Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
This is a race that they've got to show that they're turning back the GOP advances over the last few years and win. And by the same token, the GOP really needs to hang on to this seat. Again, if Missouri, pretty early in the night, we'll know how Missouri's going on election night. And if Missouri looks like it's going to be to go Democratic in the Senate race, that could be a sign that the rest of the night's not going to be great for Republicans. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Do you know how the two national parties are sitting financially right now? I know the Republicans have a huge advantage, at least a few weeks ago, because of they had a story about Rahm Emanuel storming out of Howard Dean's office because he was mad because of the way the national party has blown through all the money and everything.
Right. And actually, I sympathize with Dean on that. I think Dean's actually, mm-hmm. in theory, has done a good job of trying to reinvigorate the Democratic Party from the grassroots level. The problem is he can't keep out of his own way. He keeps saying crazy stuff, but
exactly.
At the same time, Rahm Emanuel is a pretty good strategist himself. I think that I've heard recently I read an article that said that the DNC is actually has about 85% of what the RNC has. So they've closed the gap pretty considerably. Yeah. And the RNC spent heavily on a couple of races, particularly the California House race.
Yeah, well, they
spent heavily on that.
And I think a lot of this is that, you know, Rahm Emanuel and all of them, I think they're, you know, they don't really, if they do, they forget that, you know, the Democrats have a little bit of advantage because they got the moveon.org out there waiting to help. And that's a big, you know, plus on their side, too. I mean, they got millions.
Yeah, and there have been some Republican 527s, but one thing the Democrats have an edge in this year is that the passion, it seems to be on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't, sometimes it's misplaced, but it's on their side because what's been happening lately is we've seen conservatives get a little bit more riled up.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats, because they've been out of power for so long,
yeah.
Obviously they have a lot of interest. They're keeping up with their candidates. They know what's going on. At least activists do.
Yeah. In the chat room, K9 is saying that the Democrats, maybe if the Democrats didn't sound like a room full of little children, absolutely. They need to have a single group of unified positions. I've said that as well. They need to come out with their own, Contract with America kind of, they need to speak with one voice instead of 26 voices.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is the Democratic Party has turned into a bunch of disparate interest groups.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got to decide, like you said, they've got to decide about a common agenda, but mm-hmm. the problem is they have to kowtow to certain interest groups that, for example, you know, if you're pro-life and you want to run as a Democrat, you got problems. Look at Bob Casey in Pennsylvania. He's had a lot of people upset with him because he claims that he's not for abortion.
Mm-hmm.
He believes, you know, he's pretty much pro-life, and he's got, even though he's got a great chance at picking that seat up and being he's a very progressive Democrat as far as his views on labor and on health care and things like that, and even on judicial nominations, but they're worried about his views on abortion, but because they have to kowtow to that particular group.
Yeah.
It's the same in the GOP in a certain sense, but because the GOP's in the majority, they bring more to the table when they're dealing with these interest groups.
Yeah. Well, plus Hillary donated money to Casey's campaign out of her own war chest as well.
Right.
So, and then also you have with Tennessee, you have that's going to be interesting because you got Bob Corker, Ed Bryant, and Hillary versus Harold Ford.
Yeah, Hillary. Yep.
Versus Harold Ford. I like Harold Ford. You know, everybody keeps, I feel bad for him because, you know, everybody keeps saying, what's his name? Barack Obama, blah blah blah. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, I've seen Harold Ford on TV. He's very moderate. You know, he speaks common sense and everything. He's not, you know, really way off to the left. He's kind of.
I'm actually very impressed with Harold.
Yeah,
Ford.
I just see him run for president. I'd support him, you know, over Barack Obama. Anyway.
Well, I think he'd be the Democratic Party would be well served to put someone like Harold Ford in House leadership at the very least. Of course, now he's running for Senate.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this race is, and this is another race that the GOP really needs to hold Bill Frist's seat in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose this race in Tennessee again, it's going to be something that's like. It would indicate that there's trouble, you know. at this point, it looks like Bob Corker is the favorite because he's a little bit more moderate. And Ed Bryant and Van Hillary are both former congressmen. Hillary ran for governor in 2002, and Bryant ran for U.S. Senate in 2002. They're both very, very conservative, and so they're kind of they're all polling pretty well. But Bryant and Hillary are kind of splitting the more conservative primary vote, whereas Corker is able to solidify the business community, and he's raised more money. So it looks like it may end up being Corker coming out of here. That's just my opinion, versus Harold Ford.
Yeah. Now, how's the – you think Ford's going to hold off? And because he's pretty popular in that state.
Well, actually, every poll I've seen has shown him behind the three of them.
Oh.
Now,
huh.
It's been close. It's not It's not a blowout. One problem you've got is Harold Ford's family. His father is a – not his father. I'm sorry. His uncle is a – is a famous state senator, a well-known state senator.
He's got some scandals,
doesn't
he?
Now because he's been arrested for bribery and corruption. And he's got some other, not bribery and corruption. He was arrested. He wasn't arrested, but he was
charged.
He's in trouble for ethical violations, but he also was discovered that he has two families. He's basically married to two women, and he goes back and forth. It's just a mess. Now, that's not Harold Ford's fault, but it's a conservative state, you know.
They'll time to it. It's a shame, really. Well, maybe, the silver lining is that Harold Ford doesn't get it. Maybe the powers that be in the party will maybe put Ford in charge of the party and send Howard Dean.
you're really hoping, aren't you?
I like Ford. I made it clear for weeks now, I don't like Howard Dean running the party. But even Ford, he knows what he's talking about. He doesn't, fly off the handle like Howard Dean does. Yeah, and be a fresh face for the, leadership of the party.
Things talking about these disparate interest groups the Democratic Party has to deal with. The Black Congressional Caucus came out and defended William Jefferson, the guy who they found like $100,000 in his freezer, and they're coming out and saying that Nancy Pelosi is a racist. Nancy Pelosi is a racist because she's kicking him off of his committee until they get to the bottom of this. And they're like saying that's racist. Well, that there's no credibility there. People look at that and are like, well, that's ridiculous. You're trying to call the Republicans the party of corruption, and you're not going to stand up to your own corruption in your own party. And I think people like Harold Ford have been at odds with the Black Congressional Caucus. Now, he's a member, but they've been at odds with them because he's more moderate. He's willing to look at more centrist views about things. So I think he'd be a great choice to head the party.
Absolutely.
Probably won't.
Now, Virginia, George Allen's running into some trouble because they just announced when I was leaving that James Webb won the primary, right, to run against George Allen.
Webb is a former Navy secretary under Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, so he's a Republican turned Democrat. Now, they're hoping that the Democrats are hoping that this will bloody up George Allen enough where he won't either diminish him in 08 or knock him out of the box completely, huh?
Yeah. Now, I think at this point, I think it's hard to forecast a scenario where Allen loses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mark Warner could get behind Webb, and that might help, but Warner didn't want to run for Senate because Warner wanted to run for president.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mark Warner's guy was Harris Miller, the other candidate that lost today. So if Warner gets behind James Webb, then, that might help some. Webb does present some problems for George Allen. Mainly is he does have crossover support, and he can certainly garner some independent and Republican votes. At the same time, Allen comes across pretty well in Virginia. I mean, he's kind of a good old boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
former governor,
mm-hmm. And also one thing that I read today just before I got on the air with you was that I saw some breakdowns from the vote today, and James Webb did not, even though it was a very tiny turnout, 3% turnout, so this is hardly conclusive. But James Webb got he didn't win a single county that was a majority-minority county, if you know what I mean by that.
Hmm.
In other words, any county that had more African-Americans or Hispanics combined than whites, Webb didn't win. Miller won all of those.
Really?
And so in order for a Democrat to win, now we know that African-Americans will overwhelmingly vote Democrat, but the key is not just them voting, but turning out.
Yeah.
And if Webb cannot excite the African-American base in Virginia and the minority community, that's going to be an even taller order because he needs all those votes to take on someone like Allen.
Yeah, especially with the name recognition. His father is a former famous football coach and blah, blah, and all that stuff. So.
And Allen's going to have tons of money. I mean, he's been raising money for years. And the thing about this is this seat is the ultimate and must-win for GOP. If for somehow George Allen is behind or it's neck and neck and he's having a hard time winning this seat, that is really bad news. For the Republican Party, and it's bad news for George Allen because he needs a big win here. If he can get a big win, like he wins 57-41 or something like that, he can, really say he's a legitimate powerhouse in Virginia. At the same time, if Mark Warner could get James Webb elected,
wow,
Mark Warner's appeal would just go through the roof. Yeah. It's already high because of what he's done in Virginia.
Yeah. Well, he had a big soiree here in Vegas too during this yearly cost thing over at the Stratosphere. He spent I forget how much money on this ballroom and like holy cow, he's serious. He's
reaching out to that part of the party.
He's really trying. I give him that much. And what about Rhode Island? Lincoln Chafee, he's the independent, right?
He's a Republican.
He was a Democrat, and he switched, right?
No, actually, he's always been a Republican, but he's one of those Republicans that probably would be a Democrat if the Democratic Party took over. If you know what I mean.
Now, he's running a primary, right? With Steve, was it Laffey?
Steve Laffey. He's the mayor of Cranston, which is one of the few towns in Rhode Island. Laffey is running a typical conservative, not really socially conservative, but fiscally conservative campaign. There's a very small but conservative group of Republicans in Rhode Island, but in the primary, independents can also vote. So Chafee is trying to count on that to help him because Chafee is probably to the left of a few Democratic senators.
Wow.
Democratic side. Yeah, he's voted against Bush's tax cuts. He's voted, he's got a pretty liberal, it'd be called liberal, I guess, environmental agenda.
Mm-hmm.
He has voted against some of Bush's judicial appointment nominees. Now, he's also supported the president on some things, but in 2004, he even said that he wasn't going to vote for George W. Bush, that he was going to vote for, he was going to write in his George W. Bush's father, the first president of Bush.
Yeah.
So he's made it clear he's not a big fan.
Yeah.
But,
well, he's very popular in that state, right?
Republicans.
He's real popular in Rhode Island, right? The family has been entrenched there for years, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He is popular, but again, in a primary where it's a pretty small group of voters, Laffey is using the some different organizations in D.C. that are like the Club for Growth and others who are backing him, and he's going to make a go at it. And if he wins, everybody assumes that the Democrats can pick that seat up. But I don't even know if that's true. It kind of depends on. Rhode Island's a tricky place because for a long time it was more of a Republican, a blue-blood Yankee Republican kind of state, and then in the 80s it kind of began to switch to the Democratic Party.
Huh. Then we have a couple minutes.
Like southern states had switched from the Democrat to the Republican Party.
Yeah, now we only have a couple minutes left. I got two more. Minnesota Senate, Amy was a Klobuchar versus Mark Kennedy. Minnesota is a strange state there. I mean, they elected, what's his name, as the governor.
In a three-way race.
Ventura.
Ventura
and all that. They have a very independent streak about them. And then, of course, what's his name's up there? Feingold, right? Is he from Minnesota?
He's from Wisconsin, right. He's from Wisconsin.
Yeah, but he's popular in that part of the country. But now, how's that going to shake out?
Looking at it, I think the Republican Party at this point has a better candidate. Now, that doesn't always mean all that it sounds. They've got a congressman who's a young, good-looking family man. He's raised a good bit of money. The polls have been, for him, neck and neck, though, with this candidate, Amy Klobuchar. I think it's pronounced Klobuchar. She is a county district attorney, which doesn't stand exactly like a launching point to U.S. Senate, but I think it's a relatively large candidate she's from. She's pretty liberal for the Democratic Party, so it's kind of a contrast between a conservative Republican and a liberal Democrat.
Mm.
This is another race where Minnesota's got to go Democratic for the Democrats to have a chance at really changing the Senate makeup.
The chat room said
an incumbent already.
The chat room saying that the Vincor in the chat room saying that Klobuchar is her name. Klobuchar.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Klobuchar. Okay.
Correct.
I can't keep track of all the candidates. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You're not Chris Matthews, no. You're on Hardball.
Yeah, right.
Now the Maryland Senate. Now that's got Cardin and Kwesi Mfume. I don't like him either. I don't like Mfume as all. I remember when he was running. Was the NAACP?
Uh-huh.
He ran. He said, I don't know what he was. and there are financial troubles with that. It's like, right. You know, and versus Steel, you know, I really would think the people in Maryland would be, you know, smarter enough, not to elect Mfume to anything, you know.
Yeah, Mfume also hasn't raised much money. That's the problem. He's got a pretty solid base of support in the black community, but for the primary, I mean. Mm-hmm. But Cardin has a very broad-based campaign. I actually know several people that work on the Cardin campaign as volunteers and stuff. And he, you know, in every county, they've got an organization, and they're out knocking on doors and putting up signs and getting ready for this September primary. And Fumé's, you know, it hasn't raised a lot of money. Cardin's raised over $2 million.
He's running on his name, probably. Yeah.
Who's that?
Mfume. He's thinking because he's the big, famous Kwesi Mfume. Everybody was just come vote for him.
He is, essentially, and there's been a lot of complaining here in the state that the Democratic Party has not been quick to embrace him or any other African-American candidates, which I think is legitimate, and that's certainly a point that Michael Steele has made, the Republican, that blacks need to take a second look at the Republican Party, particularly him. Steele is running away from the president in a lot of ways. He's here in Maryland, the president's not popular at all, and hasn't really been for most of his 6 years. So Steele is running as a conservative on some issues, but he's running against No Child Left Behind and some other components of the Bush agenda. But Steele's had a tremendous amount of help from the Republican Party raising money. So another seat where the Democrats really shouldn't lose the Senate seat, but because the Republicans have recruited a pretty good candidate, the Democrats have a good candidate too. If Cardin wins the primary, he's a very strong candidate. If the Democrats have to pour tons and tons and tons of money into Maryland to hold that seat, that's taking resources away from seats where they're more swing. And if they lose the seat, I think losing the Senate seat in Maryland would be curtains for them as far as taking the Senate back.
True. Well, Justin, we're at the end of our time with you. We almost got the whole list there. Congratulations. We almost did it. Anyway,
we'll
bring on in a few weeks, if that's all right with you.
That'd be fine with me, sure.
All right, thank you very much.
We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Bye.
And that was Justin from the 2008 Political Perspective blog. I know he ran just a minute or so late, just I want to make sure he got through his whole list. That was very good. And just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Invincor, our first part of our Doctor Who review discussion. And we'll be right back for our second hour. This is Sean O'Mac with Subject to Discussion. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Vortex, Rose, no one's meant to see that.
This is the abomination. Exterminate!
I am the Bad Wolf. I create myself. I take the words. I scatter them in time and space. To leave myself here.
Rose, you've got to stop this. You've got to stop this now. You've got the entire vortex running through your head. You're gonna burn.
I want you safe. My doctor. Protected from the false god.
You cannot hurt me. I am immortal.
You are tiny. I can see the whole of time and space, every single atom of your existence, and I divide them. Everything must come to dust. All things. Everything dies. The time war ends.
I will not die. I cannot die.
Rose.
stop. Just let go.
How can I let go of it? I bring life.
But this is wrong. You can't control life and death.
But I can. The sun and the moon. The day and night. Why do they hurt?
The power's gonna kill you, and it's my fault.
I can see everything. All that is. All that was. All that ever could be.
That's what I see. All the time. And doesn't it drive you mad?
My head.
Come here.
It's killing me.
I think you need a doctor.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. Oh, that scene was so sad at the end. I was in tears here. It's gone. He hit a hold of me for a few minutes. But anyway, this is part one of our Doctor Who review. And what was it? Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. Also podcasted. Thank you, everybody listening live. And listen to the podcast, everybody in the chat room. Thank you. And also, now we'll be joined by Steve, also known as Invincor.
Where's the disco ball?
It's coming. And Steve, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
There you go. Welcome back to the program.
Well, glad to be back.
All right, we ran into
you get the 70s
you
version.
You get the 70s version.
It sounds a little more recent than that.
Yeah. Was that the 96? Was that from the movie?
No. The TV movie one was a terrible, somewhat orchestral version. It was actually synthesized orchestra that... Yeah. Sounded like the kind of music you'd hear on an award show when the show won and the band would play the
terrible
version of a
theme song. I forget where I got that one from, but anyway. And then, now, you give everybody out there your website.
Yeah, my website is DoctorWhoVideoFact.com.
VideoFact.com. And now the...
Doctor Who DVDFact.com.
Oh, there you go. Doctor Who DVDFAQ.com.
Yes, that's right.
There you go. And now with the, have you noticed that any of the popularity increasing now with the season finale?
Actually, I don't have a web counter on it, so I can't tell
no.
you.
Really? I know. I'm just wondering because you hear about the ratings and all that, and you know, sci-fi is they don't know if they're picking it up, and then you see something somewhere said they're going to air it in October and all
yes,
that.
Yes, that was an interesting little development this morning. That there was a report that found its way into the Outpost Gallifrey forums. It was a press release about mm-hmm. Doctor Who spin-off merchandise, specifically the novels.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, it casually mentioned that Doctor Who would be returning in October to the Sci-Fi Channel for the second season.
Yeah.
And we haven't yet, we've not heard anything official from the Sci-Fi Channel. October would make sense if they plan to pair it up with Battlestar Galactica, because we know that's coming back in October.
That would make sense, because if they don't, with Doctor Who, Galactica would be stuck in the middle of a bunch of reruns.
I had actually heard a rumor some months ago that when they bought season one, they actually did buy season two. They just haven't said it yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they want to see if there be, first of all, the ratings would hold, you know, which they
right.
They have, more or less.
Yeah, and they put out another little thing on their main website today, mm-hmm. spinning how good the ratings were, apparently, compared to what they had on at this time last year.
Yeah, they said that, I got it right here, it says the new updated Doctor Who boosted Sci-Fi Channel's ratings on Friday nights by double digits, the network reported.
Right.
They averaged a 1.3 household rating and 1.5 million total viewers, and it's 9 o'clock Friday time slot, which is, again, they say it's outstanding because they're in the middle of a bunch of reruns.
Right, you know? Right. I mean, it's the only thing on the night that's new to the audience.
Exactly.
Even that it's a year old.
Not only that, it's Friday night and it's summer. You know,
right.
They should be excited about those numbers. Now,
yes.
Have you heard anything about what Russell Davies thinks of how the show's doing here? Anything?
No. Hmm. I think they're too concentrated on getting Torchwood going, on monitoring the transmission of season two in Britain, mm-hmm. and keeping up with the podcast and getting pre-production going on the next Christmas special.
Yeah.
And then the next season to come after that.
Huh.
So I think he's a little too busy for us. I know that Phil Collinson, the actual, I guess in American terms, he'd be the line producer. He appeared on some chat show a few weeks ago and mentioned that he seemed to think the ratings were doing very well for Sci-Fi, or at least that's what Sci-Fi told him. So.
Yeah. Well, then they also have now we haven't gotten the ratings yet for Parting of the Ways yet.
No,
have you?
Yet.
But the ratings for The Bad Wolf actually slipped a little bit. 1.02 in average household
from 0.03, and that's I would think that's within the margin of error.
Yeah, and at 1.3 million viewers, which still is outstanding for a Friday night show in the middle of summer on Friday night at 9 o'clock. And then Sci-Fi reports that Doctor Who is currently averaging 1.27 household rating and an average audience of 1.5 million viewers. Which
That's
is
over the course of the season, I believe.
Yeah, which is outstanding. Now, what did you think of the season finale? I mean, I like I said, it's been incredible. I enjoyed it. It was amazing.
Well, yes, I did too. I mean, it really knocked the whole season out of the park as far as I was concerned. That was exactly the right exclamation point that I was looking for the whole year long.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe could have explained Bad Wolf just a little better, but on the whole, I really loved it. I thought they hit every. I loved how it kept hitting every emotional note from all the previous episodes of the season, and how Billy Piper had two or three, well, I guess what you call Oscar clips, where she had some rant at her mother about the way about what Dad would do or how she should stand up and fight, and not just run away. And then, of course, there's a big kiss at the end.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was done purely to save Rose's life, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
It didn't have anything to do with romantic.
What, the two guys kissing?
Sorry, what was that?
The two guys kissing? That wasn't to save her life.
That was interesting, too. And that was a big subject of discussion all year long about whether or not Sci-Fi would cut that. Because it is two guys kissing, and because the episode is very long, they had to cut four scenes from what we saw.
Well, you saw it from the back of his head, so maybe they didn't lock lips.
No, apparently they really did do it. Yeah, I wondered that myself when I first saw it, but according to John Barrowman, according to everyone who was on the set, yeah, they really did do it. And in fact, there's an outtake, which no one's seen, where Barrowman starts the kiss and then turns it into this big passionate thing, and they wind up wrestling on the ground.
Oh, my God. Well, you know how the Brits are, you know what I mean?
And Eccleston's not averse to doing homosexual politics shows. He's done that before.
Really? But. Now, and then, well, the of course, I'm going to get somebody, Dalek Emperor. That was incredible. That's the first time the Emperor's ever been seen or heard from in Doctor Who, right?
No. He's based on partly on an Emperor Dalek that was seen in 1967 in a story called The Evil of the Daleks. And then we did later see a smaller Emperor, which was in fact Davros in disguise in 1988. But and we've heard. This Emperor voice has turned up several times in the spin-off audio productions that got Nick Briggs the job of doing the voices for the for the new TV series. So now, he basically just had to bring that voice back.
Now, I thought it was incredible how they, well, they opened the show with her on the ship, on the Dalek ship,
yeah.
And then the your companion with the doctor, you'll tell us where he's going. All of a sudden, they fire these looks like these torpedoes at at this TARDIS, and then what else? And then. And then the doctor materializes the TARDIS inside the ship. I thought that was
incredible. Around Rose and a Dalek.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yes.
The effects.
Those are some old TARDIS tricks. We saw them. We saw things like that being pulled in the original series, but never all at once.
Now,
like materializing around an object, we saw that. Dematerializing at the last second when a missile hits you, that happened a couple of times.
Really?
So he pulled out all the stops for that.
Absolutely. Now, there's been some debate on some of the boards that I recall years ago when I was watching it on Channel 11 in Chicago, that wasn't there a Dalek in the TARDIS before?
No, this is the first
time
it happened in the television series.
Oh.
The only time it ever happened before was in a... was in a TV commercial. It wasn't even the real TARDIS or a real doctor or a real Daleks. It was really badly faked versions of all three for a commercial for some candy bar in the 60s.
Oh, that must have stuck in my head, though, because I remember years. I'm like, I remember
Cybermen
this.
Got inside.
Oh.
Karns got inside. Yeah. The Master got inside, but never a Dalek before.
First time. And Dalek actually got off a shot inside the TARDIS, too.
Yes.
Hit the wall there.
Yep.
And then what else?
Jack defabricated it.
Yeah, and Jack killed it, and the doctor has a big confrontation, everything with the Emperor and all that. But mm-hmm. The special effects are incredible because a lot of people were watching the detail. But when the doctor was talking, you can see in the background the Daleks on the other ships moving. I'm like, God, it's incredible. Went back,
and you can even see a whole lot more on the DVD.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it's a slightly lower bit rate that Sci-Fi's got there, But on the DVD set, especially I have an HD TV, and I'm watching it, and I go, oh my gosh, this is good.
The
level of detail they poured into it. Also, one thing I didn't really catch until recently was that the Daleks nearest the Emperor all have black tops, which that's an indication of rank. A black Dalek has more rank than your ordinary Dalek, and I didn't catch that until just recently. Oh, yay, they've got black Daleks there. And that's another thing they had in Evil of the Daleks, was the Emperor was surrounded by those types.
It's like in Battlestar Galactica, the original series, the gold one was like had more authority than those silver Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And we see a gold Dalek in the original series, too, but these are all kind of gold, so...
Really, and then let's see. Then they go to the whole thing about the Delta Wave and how it'll not only wipe out the Daleks.
Right now, this is where the first cut happened. We lost three scenes coming back from the first commercial, where the doctor landed the TARDIS on the station, ran out and told the technicians to turn up all their transmitters to full power in order to stop the Daleks from just transmitting on board the station. Mm. And then they reveal how. They didn't have enough shuttles to get everyone off the station. That's why they've got a bunch of people stranded on floor zero, and that's why Linda with a Y is still there. And all the techs. And then
that makes sense.
Then they cut down to those people, and Roderick, the game show winner, he's complaining about not getting his money. And then they go back up top, and they ask, have we tried warning Earth about the Daleks? And they said, yes, they didn't believe us, all they did was suspend our license because we stopped the game shows.
So we didn't see all those scenes. The sci-fi edited them out.
That was all cut for time by Sci-Fi.
Because the show airs uninterrupted, right?
That's right. BBC? Yeah, there are no commercials on the BBC.
Wow, so it's an hour. It's incredible. It's an extra, 10 minutes of story that we lost.
Well, it was actually, in running time, it was more like 90 seconds, but they crammed a lot into those 90 seconds. The other bit was later on, there's just the front end of a scene where Rose, when she first asks him why we don't just go back in time in the TARDIS and warn everybody. There's a little bit more to that, the front end of that scene, where she starts to ask, then stops, and starts to ask, and then stops again. She doesn't want to quite come out and say it. Mm. Then he finally goes, what? And she does.
Yeah, and then the Daleks are going through the satellite 5, killing people. And I like how they went up to 495, and Android came out and wiped out three of them. I thought that was
a great moment. I loved that because we'd kind of forgotten about her. And then suddenly there she was. And she's the only one that has any success.
Yeah.
Anne Robinson kills three Daleks.
Yeah, she gets wiped out.
Yeah.
And then Linda with the Y gets wiped out because the Daleks blast her through the window.
Wasn't that spooky?
Yeah, that was amazing.
I love how you... the ear lamps flash, and you know what it's saying, but you can't hear it. And then they smash the, the window, and there she goes.
And then Rose, of course, the doctor sends Rose back to London to be with Jackie and Mickey there.
Right.
And then she's on the playground. She sees the bad wolf, and then she connects it all
that
in.
That was a great shot. I love that.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Backtracking of the huge bad wolf lettering on the playground.
Yeah, and then they showed on the chalk on the playground, on the walls and everything. And she goes, "This is
everywhere."
Sign from how she can get back to the doctor.
Right.
And then she realizes now that it's a time trick, right? Because she's gone back and set the stage for her in the present to go back to the doctor, right?
Right.
Yeah, because a lot of people I know on the board are saying, how did she, I said, wait a minute.
It's time travel. It's an effect preceding the cause.
Yeah, so she actually went.
The bad wolf creature at the end, which is, it's a sort of Rose TARDIS hybrid, takes the place name of where they were, which was the Bad Wolf Corporation station, and spreads that all through the universe in order to give herself a message to create herself
to come back
and be here to save the doctor.
Yeah, so I mean it's convoluted, but I mean if it makes sense, you know, that she planted this into the past. So.
Right.
And then the big thing is everybody says, how come Rose wasn't killed when she had the time vortex in her?
Well, yes, that's a good question.
Yeah.
They don't give us the answer. But there are lots of ways to rationalize it, and my favorite explanation is that as the doctor is drawing it out of her, he's simultaneously using its power to heal her in the same way that she had just resurrected Jack.
Oh, that could be. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And because he's the last one with the hot potato, so to speak, the only way out he's got is to regenerate.
Yeah. Now there's also rumors going on that she could be a Time Lord. Huh?
No.
No. Okay. No. No. I've been in some of the boards. Oh, the only way is she's also a Time Lord, but she doesn't know it yet, or something like that. She doesn't realize it.
If she is, they haven't revealed in season two. We're 9 episodes into that.
Oh, really?
No, she's pretty normal so far. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
there was speculation about that after the season aired last year, but it was that was pretty much dashed by. By the time we saw the Christmas invasion.
Really? And then, of course, Jackie comes along and brings the tow truck to pull open the TARDIS. And then I thought that was a good scene, too.
Rodrigo owes me a favor. Yeah. Don't ask why.
And then they tied in that thing with their father from Father's Day when she said...
I loved that scene. I just loved that they called back to that moment. And that's what got... That's what swung Jackie into helping them, and without her, of course, they wouldn't have done it.
I like the character Jackie, and that actress is incredible. I mean, she pulls off this role, you know what I mean? And then the girl was holding Daddy's hand and all that stuff. So it's amazing how they wove all the episodes kind of in together.
That was the award show clip when Billie Piper won her award last fall for best.
Actress?
Performance in a drama on the Viewer's Choice Awards in Britain. That was the clip they showed, and you can see why.
Yeah, she's done an incredible job on this show. It's amazing. What else? And then she goes back. Finds the doctor and all that. And then I like the way they treat the Dalek Emperor. You know, this is the abomination or something like that.
Yeah,
he gets insulted. You know.
Yeah.
And then the language he's using, the doctor asks him, what are you going to do with me? And he goes, you are the heathen.
That was the one thing I didn't like about the episode, really.
Oh, no? You like
the emperor? The emperor going crazy and thinking he's God and all the Daleks worshipping him. We've never seen that kind of behavior in Daleks before, and I hope we don't again.
Really?
And it felt to me like, the original Daleks were very much born out of Britain's fears of what the country would have been like had it been invaded in World War II by Germany. And a lot of the early Dalek imagery is very much based on the Nazis. And it felt to me like this was an attempt, this religious thing was an attempt to graft on Al-Qaeda on top of the Daleks. And I didn't think that sat at all well with their already established characters. Now, you can have an Al-Qaeda group of aliens if you'd like, but I'd rather not have it be the Daleks.
Yeah, they could use those guys in that the end of the world with the claws or putting those little spiders all over the place. What were their names? You know, the ones.
The adherents of the repeated meme.
Yeah, they could use them as the Al Qaeda.
I suppose. Yeah. But, or really any religious fanatic group would be Al Qaeda, but you know.
And then she comes and saves the doctor and all that stuff, and she saves Jack's life. Now, do we know if she's saved a life on Earth, too, or was she just saved Jack?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so, because now this, I'll tell you this, I believe it's still on the BBC's official website, if you go there, which is www.bbc.co.uk/Doctor Who.
Wow.
And if you dig around in there, you can find what's called the Children in Need Special. Mm-hmm. Now, Children in Need is a telethon that runs in Britain in every November, and it always draws enormous ratings, enormous celebrity talent to pitch for money to donate to various children's causes.
Hmm.
And various TV shows will do little special episodes specifically to run during the marathon.
Oh.
And last year, they asked the production team of Doctor Who if they could contribute something. And at first they said, oh, no, we can't. We've already got all the episodes that are being scripted, and we haven't got anything. And then Julie Gardner, the co-executive producer, the head of drama at BBC Wales, she went to Russell and she said, you know, on Christmas Invasion, how we start with them arriving back on Earth, I really would have liked to have seen the scene that happened in the TARDIS just before that. And so they decide, well, TARDIS, that's cheap. We'll do that scene. I'll write it. What Rose and the doctor and the new doctor said to each other, and sure enough, they did a 6-minute scene. It went out in the Children in Need special, and you see Rose getting to know the 10th doctor for the first time. And that scene, I believe, is still on the official website for download. You can get that for free. You have to use Real Player to see it.
Mm.
It's not the best quality, but it is still there, and it will be in the not the box set we're going to get, but the next one that the UK will get in the fall of the current season.
So that kind of explains.
Yes,
she didn't.
I got sidetracked there. In that, she asks, "Why don't we go back and find Captain Jack?" And the doctor answers, "He's busy. He's got plenty to do. He's rebuilding the Earth."
Hmm.
So the implication is Earth is still ruined, and he left Jack there to help deal with that.
Oh, so he knows that Jack's alive, and he left him there. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
The doctor knows that. And
really? How does the doctor know that? I wonder.
Well, he had the Bad Wolf energy.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so he knows Rose brought back Jack,
right.
And he left Jack on the station and all that. Now they're going to play this into Torchwood now that somehow Jack's going to be on the station. He's going to get down to the planet.
Yes. Now there was something that I saw today that I'd forgotten about. That although the TARDIS left, mm-hmm. they left the extrapolator behind, that force field thing that they got off the Slovene.
Oh.
And there's some speculation. Maybe he uses that to get back to present day Cardiff, where he knows eventually the Doctor will turn up again, because that's where the rift is.
Oh.
And that's what Torchwood's going to be. Is going to deal with. It's going to be based out of Cardiff, because that time rift that we've seen this season, that's based in Cardiff, it's still there, and it will still draw aliens to it, sort of like the Hellmouth on Buffy.
Oh, so he's not going to... Oh, you see, I thought it would have been interesting. It would have based the series on that satellite and
No, Torchwood's present-day Cardiff.
Well, that's different.
An investigative team. And we're hearing we're hearing a lot about Torchwood in the new series. They're hammering... hammering it over the head with it.
You gotta expect that, you know.
We almost expected the Cybermen to have emblazoned on them. Watch Torchwood this fall on BBC One.
I guess it's all right. But I just thought maybe that's how they're going to start the new show, have him, you know, on this satellite and rebuild, Earth, down there. But And then,
maybe he does that in between, or we might see some of that. Who knows?
Yeah.
We haven't got Torchwood yet. Although I do think they're building towards perhaps doing some Torchwood stuff here in the season finale of Doctor Who.
Oh.
In the current season. The way they keep hitting us over the head with it so much, I figure it's got to show up at some point.
Oh, like a crossover? And
right.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Well, it does turn up in a big way in Christmas Invasion, but
really?
We don't actually see any of its personnel on that occasion.
Really? I like how it goes through that whole speech at the end, how, you know, I want to take you to see Barcelona, not the city, but the planet, and
right.
the dogs with no noses and all that. So that's pretty funny. And then he regenerates, and then the last thing you hear is, hello. Or
Yeah.
Now, how is the new Doctor Who doctor getting now? See, I have a question, because I was watching the credits. Now, I'm not an expert in Doctor Who, so pardon me if I'm getting this wrong. When in the credits it says David Tennant as Doctor Who. Now, wait a minute. I thought he was never referred to as... He's only referred as the Doctor, not Who.
Okay.
Is that right? Isn't that right?
If you really want to go open this can of worms...
Yeah.
Okay. In the original series, he was always simply called the Doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
Except on, there's one occasion in one of the 60s episodes where a new writer had come on, a new production team had come in, and they, by mistake, they had a computer calling him Doctor Who. It never happened otherwise than that. But always in the closing credits for the first 18 years, it said Doctor Who, Tom Baker, John Pertwee, whoever it was. Then, starting in season 19, they thought, wait a minute. They thought exactly the same thing you're thinking. He's not Doctor Who. He's the Doctor.
Yeah.
Let's credit him like that. So starting from this 19th season onwards, it was always the Doctor. But then when they brought it back with Christopher Eccleston, it was Doctor Who again.
Yeah.
Partly, I think, out of a sort of nostalgic sense that the older fans, who are basically running the show now, they had this nostalgic sense of, oh, it's Doctor Who. We should be proud of the name. We should credit him as that. And Eccleston didn't care.
Huh.
But when David Tennant took over,
yeah.
He's one of the fans who thinks that you should. He's a big fan himself. He's the first Doctor Who is. He wanted to be credited as the Doctor. And so when you see the Christmas Invasion, from then on, it's the Doctor again.
Very good. Well, I mean, it's good. Yeah, because I was watching the thing on the Sci-Fi Channel. They had the interview with Eccleston, and he said, "Oh, I didn't go back and watch the other. He never did watch the old show and all that, and he wanted to do it himself." So Tennant is actually a fan, and he wants to be referred to as the Doctor, right?
Right.
Which makes sense. I mean, you know, he's not. You know, you never see him as "Hello, Doctor Who." You know, it's always the Doctor. You know,
yeah.
Even the Daleks, you know, the Doctor. You know where the Doctor is. You know,
right.
I mean, and then now another question: why the Daleks refer to him as the heathen? Now, didn't the Doctor wipe out their home planet years ago?
Yes, and apparently in the Time War, he destroyed all the Daleks except for the Emperor and that one that wound up in Van Satten's place.
Yeah, because I remember watching one years ago, and then I remember they saying that the Doctor wiped out the Daleks' homeworld. So, I mean, that's probably why.
Yeah, that happened in the original series in Remembrance of the Daleks with the Seventh Doctor. He took out Skaro.
Yeah, so, I mean, that ties all in. So now I'm guessing you're seeing that you already got the second season or something, huh?
Yes, I'm seeing the second
season. Now, are the Daleks, do they turn up in the second season? Or
we haven't seen them yet.
Not yet. So
We're nine episodes in. There's four to go, and we haven't seen any Daleks yet. We've seen Cybermen, but no Daleks yet.
Huh. And
although there are rumors
that they're going to turn up, really,
maybe.
And then Georgia was saying that I don't know. I remember that the first Doctor was also called Grandfather. What?
Well, yes, that's the very first companion was his granddaughter.
Oh,
Her name was Susan.
Wow.
And that was partly because in the original brief, the writer who put it together, they wanted to have him traveling with a young companion, but they thought it would be rather creepy. To have this old man traveling with this very young girl and a teenage girl and not have a family relationship between them.
Oh, yeah. That would seem
so they made her the granddaughter.
Yeah. Now how, I don't know if you're, how the new Doctor is getting accepted overseas. Now, it seems like the fans, they like him as much as they liked Eccleston, huh?
Yes, they do.
Really? Now
the audience, there's something called the Audience Appreciation Index in Britain where they... In addition to collecting the raw ratings, they also ask how well did you like this show.
Mm-hmm.
And the scores it's getting on that meter are about the same as they are. Actually, they're slightly better than they were last year for the Eccleston season. So presumably the general public are liking him quite a lot, too.
Very good, very good. Now I've been seeing some of the ratings for the second season over there. One episode, the ratings actually dropped a little bit. Now, how's it actually doing over there?
Well, it started, you have to kind of discount the rating that the very, very first episode with Eccleston got, because that had massive amounts of promotion. It got 11 million viewers when it debuted, and then from then on, the Eccleston episodes tended to be in the 7 to 8 million range.
Mm-hmm.
Tennant's episodes, the Christmas one started at 9 million, then he's been averaging 8 to 9 up until the weather turned good in Britain. And Britain, of course, has a world-famous reputation of getting lots and lots of rain. And when they have good weather, everyone heads outdoors and no one watches television.
Mm-hmm.
And this season is running later this year than it did last year. because they want to they always like to star on Easter weekend for some reason, and Easter was much later this year, so we're now it's we can't really compare year over year from here on because it wasn't on this late in the summer last year. It ended in the second week of June, so from here on we're into new territory. And but the ratings were either better or only. They were better than last year, so like the first 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now they're just slightly below last year.
Yeah. Now we only got a couple minutes left. It's pretty on the spot, but yeah, of the first season of Doctor Who, what episode stands out as your favorite? Now, you know, if it's the finale, fine. But anything else kind of stands out?
Of the Eccleston season,
yes.
My favorite's The Empty Child / The Doctor Dances.
That was outstanding.
And that's the one I think is going to win the Hugo.
Yeah.
If a Doctor Who episode wins the Hugo, I don't know. There's an awfully big Battlestar Galactica lobby out there. Although they've just won a Peabody, maybe people won't want to vote for it again.
Yeah.
And this season wasn't quite as good as it had been.
Yeah,
so.
that was outstanding. Like I said the whole the yellow hue they used for the time and everything. It just felt like, you know, they put a lot of effort into the two parter. You know.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, it was outstanding.
Sunk a lot of the budget into it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just good. I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, they really pulled out all the stops.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see anything chintzy at all. I mean, you know, so far, except for the goofy people with the.
Maybe the Slovene. Although they got a lot better the second time around.
That's what I was going to say. But, you know what? It was a good break because, you know, so many episodes were so serious and all that. And this, you know, although they were serious, but also, you know, the farting was kind of cool. You know, I mean, it lightened it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And then that woman, she turns up and everything. Mm-hmm. And
so far, the second season has looked even better.
Wow.
When they first started, they didn't really know what they were doing, and they had some stumbling blocks, and they didn't spend the money in quite the wisest way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they poured way too much money into just one episode. That was the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have as much for other ones. This year, they've been much more even with how they spend it, and the results are very clearly on the screen. We got some fantastic shots.
Really?
Especially in this last two-part that we just had, where they finally go to a real hard alien planet.
Wow.
It reminded me a lot of Serenity, this last one, Firefly, Battlestar in some
really?
Respect.
Really? That's a lot to look forward to. Well, Steve, I'll let you go. Koenig is waiting in the wings. So,
Koenig, I've been.
Thank you very much. Maybe we'll bring you on in a couple weeks. We have a little Battlestar versus Doctor Who type of a thing.
You know, if they wind up. What? Mates on the channel, then we want them both to do well.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much, Steve.
All right,
thank you very much.
See you,
bye.
Sean. Bye.
Bye. And that was Steve Evensor, and we thank him for being on our part one of our two-part Doctor Who review and everything, and we'll be joined in a minute or so by Koenig Rules, and Koenig is asking, hey, who's the jackass with Sean? It's the Doctor jackass to you. What are you talking about? Anyway, so that was outstanding. It was I didn't think, you know, I was looking forward to it. I thought, oh, it's not going to be as good as everybody's saying, but it was outstanding. I mean every episode, I mean, it just I thought it was awesome from top to bottom. I mean, you can't really pick out an episode that was awful out of it. I mean, the Rose one was hokey because they introduced it was outstanding, and they introduced the what the hell are their names, the Autons and everything. They didn't mention by name, but introduced the character and everything, and her mother and everything, and it introduces the show. Kind of a little lighter way of introducing everybody, and then they delve into the more serious of the stories and everything. And I just thought it was incredible. And I wish you. Too bad that PBS can't pick up the second season. Because when I lived in Chicago, Channel 11 aired Doctor Who, and it'd be nice if PBS would pick up Doctor Who. That way, to air the whole show, you know, top to bottom, we won't miss any scenes. You know, because you come back in some of these shows and you miss, like, where are we? You come back in the middle of a scene, and you're like, what did we miss? We don't know until we get the DVD. It'd be kind of nice, you know. And I liked the end of the world. That was pretty cool, especially the ending scene where they're showing the Earth crumble and everything. I thought that was pretty good. And that wood lady, whatever her name was, she got dried out in the down in that room with the doctor and everything. And of course, Lady Cassandra, she was going to moisturize me and everything. I thought that was pretty good too. The effects were outstanding on this. And then the doctor fixing the cell phone so she can call her mother into the past and everything. So that was good as well. And then what else? Of course, the actor who plays Mickey did an outstanding job as well. I thought that was pretty good. And then, of course, then from there, he had The Unquiet Dead, which I had another outstanding episode there, and which was, of course, the time it went back in time, 1869 in Cardiff. And the whole thing with those spirits and everything, and that woman, they go down and downstairs, and the doctor holds a séance, and everything's pretty good. I'm gonna rehash every episode, but just from what I remember, every episode was top to bottom a good show. Because right now I'm on Gallifrey 1, looking at some of the screenshots, and you forget some of the scenes that they treat us to throughout the season. It was amazing. The ending scene with her getting swallowed up, by the final moments of the Gelth and everything, and that was outstanding. And what else? And then the chase that the doctor did with the horse-drawn buggy, that was pretty good as well. And then you go from that to the Aliens of London, where they show Big Ben getting wiped out. That was pretty good as well. And I think we'll be joined in a minute or so by Koenig Rules. Player scene. Oh. TARDIS, what TARDIS is getting a lot of work these last few days, is Mr. Koenig Rules.
Yes, you don't have to call me doctor, you can just call me the.
how about we just call you who?
Call you who? we got one more scene we got to play from the Who show.
Okay.
Yeah, one more scene here.
All right.
We forgot about that.
The last scene?
Yes.
Cool.
Do you mind,
Koenig? No, not at all.
The Koenig or Koenig? Dr. Koenig? There we go.
Here we go.
I'm going to take you to so many places. Barcelona?
Go.
Not the city, Barcelona. The planet, Barcelona. You love it. Fantastic place. They've got dogs with no noses. Imagine how many times a day you end up telling that joke and it's still funny.
Then why can't we go?
Maybe you will. And maybe I will. But not like this.
You're not making sense.
I might never make sense again. I might have two heads. Or no head. Imagine me with no head. And don't say that's an improvement. But it's a bit dodgy, this process. You never know what you're going to end up with.
Doctor!
Stay away!
Doctor, tell me what's going on.
I absorbed all the energy of the time vortex, and no one's meant to do that. Every cell in my body's dying.
Can't you do something?
Yeah, I'm doing it now. Time Lords have this little trick. It's all the way of cheating death. Except it means I'm going to change. And I'm not going to see you again. Not like this. Not with this daft old face. Before I go...
Don't say that.
Rose. Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know what? So was I. Hello. Okay. New teeth. That's weird. So where was I? Oh, that's right. Barcelona.
And it was quite a scene there, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It brought a tear to my eye.
Oh, yeah, I heard you sniffling during the...
Yeah.
I didn't mean to take up some time there, but I got those two scenes. I want to thank Blade Runner for helping me with the scene.
Get that's
it. Uh-oh.
Excuse me, do you mind not...
Uh-oh, and then thanks
Excuse me, do you mind not farting?
And thanks to Invincor Steve for the scene with Rose and all that. So I thought it was outstanding, huh? The
yeah, finale. Well, I told you. I'm trying to get you into a lot of trouble now.
You
have to decide, is it Who or Battlestar?
No, I put up those polls on the sci-fi.com board, and I'm getting beat up over it.
Yeah, oh my God.
It's all in good,
like,
it's all in good fun.
I don't understand who, I mean,
I don't understand.
It's
why
not even funny, huh?
Yeah, it's just it's crazy. I mean, I say now we're in the reruns. Nothing else better to do, you know?
I was telling your Confederate over there that we should start an active campaign if Ron Moore can't allow us to release spoilers. We're going all the way Who.
Oh, really? Well, actually, you know what? I did get a communique from Mrs. Ron.
Oh,
and
you did?
Yes, and in my communique...
Really? Does Mr. Ron know?
She has said, I'm not sure. She said they will do an interview, so I'm not sure if it's her or the two of them, or together, or one
with
or the
you.
Other.
With you?
With me, yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we'll just see now. I'll have to wait and see what happens, because I know she's in the middle of some kind of a birthday party, or whatever it is, and I think tomorrow's her birthday, or whatever's going on, so we'll see what happens.
That is great.
Yeah, so I
am. That is great.
Yeah, so I don't know. And anyway, I said the... finale was outstanding. The ratings haven't come in yet. But like I said, I was telling Steve, I just the whole episode, top to bottom, was pretty good, except for the Rose thing. How did she survive? You know, survive the time vortex, and the doctor had to regenerate. But Steve gave a good explanation that she, you know, he absorbed all the energy from her, but he had nowhere to put the energy. You know, when he took it, right?
Right. Well, some of it he put back into the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But there's still some in him.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny, and then he said that the bad wolf thing could have been explained a little bit better, but I don't know.
It was
convoluted kind of, but they explained how she went back in time and set breadcrumbs, like a trail for her from the past to be able to come and save the doctor. Right.
I mean, if he explained it too much, it'd be techno babble.
Yeah, Star Trek.
Exactly.
I thought
it was great. I mean,
top to bottom. I said that the scene stealer would kind of lighten the mood was having Anne come out and blast those the Daleks, you know?
Right.
You know?
Right. Cool.
Yeah, I thought that was having her, you know, you are the weakest link, and blast all three of them.
So did you like this finale of the season better than the finale of Battlestar?
Oh, you're trying to get me in trouble here.
Mrs. Ron, no.
Well, I said they're two. Well, you know, I
yeah,
there,
I know,
there
I
are
know.
Two different shows.
Different animals. I know.
But I mean, you can't really compare because we're going around.
Uh-oh.
I think we got the Emperor in there somewhere too, don't we? I didn't realize that sound effect we have was the Emperor. How dare you leave my presence? That's actually from the. We got that from the from this season.
Well,
not that one.
Yep.
Wow. We got all the old sound effects.
Wow. The resulting death.
Jeez, what's that from the 1960 Doctor Who or what?
This is only the beginning.
Wow.
We will prepare. We will grow stronger. When the time is right, we will emerge and take our rightful place as the supreme power of the universe.
Wow. But,
run for your life.
Whoa. Yeah, now he's gone now. Now, are you watching the second season?
Yes.
Really?
Part
not,
of it.
Not.
At least the opening episode. Yeah, he's fantastic.
The new guy, David Tennant.
Yeah.
Now,
I didn't know how much the old Eccleston had in terms of accent until you were playing piece, that last piece. Mm-hmm. And then it's sort of like, I thought Tennant definitely had the accent, but then when you play that last piece with Chris, he has a real noticeable accent.
Oh, yeah. When the scenes are a little more quieter, you can understand. Even Rose, when she was talking to her mother, her accent was pretty strong. But daddy and mummy and all that stuff, it's like, oh, my God.
I mean,
what is she saying again? Yeah. But and even Mickey's accent, of course, is I think the thickest of all of them, right?
Yeah, Mickey really develops in season two.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, Now, are there any hints of Bad Wolf in season two, or is that...
No. Like Invincer was saying, it's more Torchwood now every episode.
Oh, you're kidding me. So now we're going to see the words Torchwood all over the place, or what?
Oh yeah.
Really?
To obviously promote... No. They're referring to it. They're promoting the heck out of it so that it gets the ratings. So.
I mean, how are they referring to Torchwood? I don't understand
Well, in the Christmas Invasion, Torchwood has alien technology that they use to combat the aliens.
Oh.
So the Prime Minister refers to that special division, Torchwood. And so, I mean, she refers to it several times. So it's in passing, and then you see the weapon being used. And I don't want to reveal too many spoilers because the BBC might be after you.
Especially after an air no scenes, I might be.
Or maybe Rose can be interviewed by you.
I'd love to. I put in a request, so we'll see. I mean, I heard from him, so we just got to work out some
you
kind
did?
Of... I heard BBC Wales, so just the time difference is a bit of a problem.
BBC is whaling?
What?
BBC is whaling?
No. BBC Wales. That's
I know. That's I know. I'm trying to be funny here.
Oh, there we go. And also, what else? And oh, they're asking for, well, I like Doctor. I like to concentrate on that because we did a whole hour on the Battlestar finale, so we at least got to concentrate
That's
on
right.
Doctor.
Well,
Who.
Would you have ever guessed it how I was promoting the show even before you saw the first episode? Would you have ever guessed it that you would have liked it that much?
I was looking forward to it. I mean, we all know that I was looking forward. I didn't realize it was going to be this good. I thought you were full of it.
Thank you.
I know this guy's.
Now you're gonna start with me, huh?
I thought, what's he smoking?
I'm going on the sci-fi board tonight.
Yeah. Well, you know what? No, because I remember watching Doctor Who in Chicago in Channel 11.
Oh,
and I said,
Oh yeah.
Not this tinfoil hat type of show with the guy with the chintzy scarf and all that. I'm like, oh
right,
no.
Right. It was cheaply done.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
And then I thought, wait a minute. They who would have thought they would have remade Battlestar into something we could all like, and I said, and you said it was good, so you got high quality, high standards, so if it's good for you, I should at least give it a try. And then it was amazing, and it filled the void in these weeks between the Galactica.
See, would I lie to you, Sean?
No, it was incredible. I hate to see the other Doctor go though.
I know, but Tennant, you immediately gravitate to. So there's no problem.
Yeah.
There isn't. Trust me.
Yeah. Now,
trust me again. I mean, some people are definitely saying season two is better than season one. I don't know about that, but the stories are the same.
Well,
definitely the same.
Well,
quality.
The first seasons are always special because it's the first season. It sets it's all the everything's really fresh. Nothing to compare to. Same thing with Battlestar. All the first season's always going to be special because there's nothing
That's
to refer
right.
to. Now we're in the third. The third season, this is crap. It's not like the first season. Yeah, you're going to get into that now.
Now, actually, I'm looking forward to the third season of Battlestar because I think season two was more the testing period of, okay, we're going to move from 13 to 20 episodes, and now they realize what's going to work, what's not going to work. So season three, and they experimented with some episodes. One was the Cylon episode downloaded, and they realized that, I hope they realized that was probably one of the best episodes of Battlestar ever. They need to do more episodes like that.
Yeah, and actually...
Oh, we're talking about Battlestar, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, the chat room, K9's in the chat room, and K9 is saying...
K9's in the chat room?
Yeah. By your command. No.
Where's Muppet?
We had a contractual dispute with Muppet. Muppet's in a coma right now. We've got to see if Muppet can survive. K9 is saying, wait until you see season two. So they're looking forward to season two of K9.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's
then
fantastic.
Vince Orr is saying that he put up the two seasons about even so far himself.
Right. I would too.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen all of the episodes yet. I hear the Cybermen episode's really good.
Really? Now, of the first season we've gotten of Doctor Who, what episode stands out is one of your favorites?
Let me see. What episode? Well, there's World War III, there's Dalek, there's
like all of them?
The Empty Child, there's the Doctor Dances.
Yeah. How about the Aliens of London? With the thing,
yeah,
the ship
I mean,
crashes
I mean,
into the Big
when,
Ben.
when you think about it, there's the and Parting of the Ways. I mean, there's so many episodes
it's
that were
to pick.
Really good. Don't right?
Yeah.
I mean, I do like the Doctor dances only because of the way it ended.
Yeah,
it ended
on
such
a high
positive note.
Yeah.
I guess the Parting of the Ways ended on a somewhat positive note, too.
Sad and positive because, you know, Eccleston left
right.
and all that. Now, I thought World War III was outstanding, too.
Yes.
That was outstanding. And then the one where they went back in time, what was that episode? The Unquiet Dead. No,
with Charles Dickens?
Yeah. Is it The Unquiet Dead? Yeah.
The Unquiet Dead.
Yeah. I keep going because that was a good a period piece because the... The lighting was different. And it opened the show with a woman coming out with her mouth open, you know,
right.
the thing coming out of her mouth and everything.
Yep.
I thought
that was very good.
That was an incredible episode. I said I liked how they do the attention to quality, but the yellow hue and the lighting on these,
mm-hmm.
you know, go
it
back
good.
In time. And then the long game. And actually, Father's Day. Everybody forgets about Father's Day.
And don't forget Father. And don't forget Rose.
Yeah. Well, I like Father's Day because, you know, she goes back in time and all that. And
you know what? And in season two, they're going to go back to that space station that they visited in episode three. And they're going to also bring back her dad. So, I mean, all of this is so... I was looking in the chat room, too. They say BSG is more tightly written. But, hey, Doctor Who is very serial, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, but... You got to give them credit. They have drama as well as humor, or even if it doesn't work all the time, to mix the drama and the humor in a serial fashion week to week. I mean, I think that's hard to do.
Yeah, and then in Boomtown, they set the stage for what the TARDIS can do because they
that's
you know
right.
they the thing opening it up and her
and
getting
the TARDIS does a lot more in season.
Yeah,
two.
And then that's when the Doctor admits that the TARDIS is a living
right.
organism, and then opens up and turns what's her name into an egg, and then so it kind of sets the stage for what you know Rose, you know, because Rose
right.
they tied it seems like they tied all the episodes in together because now she remembered that you know with her. They had to open, you know, the thing had to open up and everything. So it's where they got the mother Jackie went to get the tow truck and opened up the TARDIS.
That's right. Yeah. I was expecting to see Rose turned into an egg.
Yeah, that's kind of a loose end there. Well, Steve was saying that they're going to tie that up, I guess, somehow in the Doctor. Because a lot of people were saying, how come she didn't get killed with all the time vortex in her? You know what I mean?
Because she's hot.
Because she signed her contract renewal, that's why. And
that's
Eccleston
right.
didn't. Now, how come, I understand that. You know, Rose has got a longer contract. How come Eccleston didn't have a longer contract? I don't understand that.
I believe, I could be corrected, too, by this. I believe he only signed on for 1 year.
Oh.
For him, he stipulated to everyone that it was a one-year contract. He wasn't really expecting either that the show would take off as much as it did, but I think he was really exhausted by the end of the year.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I think everyone was a little bit surprised by how it just took off like that because it wasn't Britain for 20 something years, and you know it was a gamble. Are they going to, you know, generate high ratings? And sure enough, they did.
Well, I mean, I don't want to rile up the Doctor Who fans, but I think a lot of the success of this show is thanks to Ron Moore and Battlestar Galactica, because if he didn't, you know, because...
Really?
I think...
Really?
No, because I think if it wasn't for Battlestar...
Why don't you tell Ron Moore that when he comes on?
I'm serious.
You've helped Doctor Who tremendously, do you know that?
I think if sci-fi and them didn't take a chance on Battlestar... BBC wouldn't have gotten the idea, hey, you know, we could do our own thing over here with Doctor Who. We don't need Battlestar. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
I think, because there's some similarities. Very realistic.
It might be an ego type of thing. You know, well, Americans, you know, they brought back Battlestar. Well, we can do, it might be that.
We'll show them.
We can do better than that.
Yeah.
You know, we have our Doctor Who. We can trump Galactica.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. That could have provided a trigger.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then K-9 is saying that the best non-spoiler way I can describe David's portrayal is that he's finally gotten serious about being a Time Lord. Really? Hmm. And then K9 also says that K9 says that the BBC screwed the pooch by releasing comments that Chris was leaving after the first season. Yeah, right. That was kind of whoa. And Vince Orr is saying that BSG had nothing to do with Doctor
Who.
Uh-oh.
Nothing. He knows the BBC.
Yeah. Oh, the BBC decided to do Doctor Who in 2003. I'm not up on, you know.
Well, let me see. What about Galactica, the miniseries?
Yeah.
It was released in December.
Yeah. Buffy and,
then
and Buffy
after
and
the
Angel.
Miniseries, didn't they go ahead? Yeah, I remember that.
It takes at least
2 years.
For
a month or two, and then they finally decided to do the series?
Maybe. And Vince Orr is also saying that Buffy and Angel and Firefly were much bigger influences than Battlestar.
Uh-oh.
Koenig with Lego.
Okay.
We'll have to bring you back next week. We'll do a Battlestar versus Doctor Who showdown. The best and the worst of the two series. How about that?
Uh-oh.
Next week. Want to do that? That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Compare and contrast.
That would be very cool, and you'll have the poll results, right?
Yes. Well, they'll be up on Sci-Fi anyway.
Okay.
There's no way to hold them, though. But all right. Well, there you go.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And that was Koenig Rules. There's Koenig, as you want to call him, the doctor. Thank you for being on the program. Thank you to Steve and Vince Orr for being on. Thanks also to Justin Reddy from the Political Perspective blog. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thanks you. Whatever. Thank you, everybody, listening to the program live and also the podcast and in the chat room. Next week, yes, we'll do the Battlestar versus Doctor Who showdown. And in the morning, tomorrow morning is Daily Noise. The website is subject2discussion.com. Email is subject2discussion@lvrocks.com. Good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow.
LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
What do beautiful girls, the Olympic Garden Gentlemen's Club, and the WWE pay-per-view have in common? As the official WWE Blast Area, you can watch every pay-per-view.